To kick off the year, I'm starting a new series called The Legacy, Africa Through Their Eyes. This is a series that features past heads of states of African countries as they walk us through their personal lessons of leadership and how they defined their legacy. Joining me today is former Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn. His Excellency Desalegn was the second Executive Prime Minister of Ethiopia, who served from August 2012 following the death of Prime Minister Meles Zenawi until his resignation and handover to his successor, Dr. Abiy Ahmed, current Prime Minister of Ethiopia, in April 2018. Previously, he served as Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Foreign Affairs, Social Affairs Minister, and Government Chief Whip Minister under Prime Minister Meles Zenawi. His Excellency Desalegn is seen as the first leader in modern Ethiopian history to step down voluntarily, setting the stage for sweeping reforms in Ethiopia. He viewed his resignation as vital in the bid to conduct reforms that would lead to sustainable peace and democracy. During his tenure, Ethiopia saw annual economic growth rates averaging over 10%, and today he shares with us what he wishes he knew then, his top leadership lessons, and what he believes his legacy has been for Ethiopia. This was a really fascinating and interesting chat, and I'm really, really excited to share this all with you. So, without further ado, let's get straight into the chat.
Your Excellency Hailemariam Desalegn, I wonder, what do you know now, right, about being an African head of state that you wish you had known in your first year of office? I know you did sort of come from outside. You were deputy prime minister, as well as, I believe, Minister of Foreign Affairs, amongst other things. So maybe it wasn't too new. But I wonder, are there some things you've learned now that you wish you had known then? And it would be also good to hear afterwards what you'd say maybe your top 2 to 3 leadership lessons that you learned as Prime Minister are.
Thank you, Maria. I think this is a very pertinent question. So I was reflecting the same when I left office, and still I'm reflecting. But I try to screen and distill 3 major things, as you mentioned, amongst the others. The first one is, I wish I would have known in the beginning that physical infrastructure and productive sector growth dominated economic development, which I mentioned in the previous discussions. I think if not supported by free will and progressive democracy, it's not sustainable. That's what I have seen. So I think from the very beginning, as we focused on our economic transformation and economic development, we should have also, you know, try our best to democratize our country and observe human rights, which somehow during my term, which has not been as strong as it is in the economic sector. So I think that is the lesson I learned. I wish I would have known this properly in the beginning.
That's a big one.
Yeah. The second one is, you know, tribalism and extremism are the cancers of harmonious society building. And African countries, as you know, should deal with this ethno-nationalism and extremism from the outset to bring about citizen-centric civic nationalism. Otherwise, this becomes, you know, a marketplace where the elite will engage in this kind of, you know, cliques and networks that detract the smooth functioning of the state, as well as, you know, the rapid and accelerated economic and social development, as well as democratization. So this is the second lesson, and Ethiopia is still suffering from this issue. You know, we have gone to, you know, a devastating war, you remember, and because of this very destructive outlook And I think this is the second lesson I learned, and I should have worked in it. I tried, but I didn't imagine that it will be as worse as it is now.
Yeah.
And the third is, you know, being small and balkanized doesn't help. You have to compete globally. And therefore, I think regional and continental integration, be it economic, political, whatever, you can start with economy as well, but should be expedited through concerted political will.
Mm.
I think, look, those countries that dominated the global politics and economics, like the United States, China, Brazil, India, even the Europeans, they brought their own unity. They call it European Union. Are becoming, yeah. Because of that, it's because mainly of their size. So the more bigger you are, the more you can compete in the global market.
Yeah.
See, so we need to stop balkanization. We need to stop dragging our foot for more African integration. So I think this is essential. Can you see that? These are three lessons, which are very important lessons I learned.
Those are amazing reflections on your time, and even sort of being able to admit to we could have done more in some of these places. So thank you for sharing that with us. That's very helpful. You mentioned democracy, and I wanted to follow up on that. In the world that we find ourselves in, or in the time that we find ourselves in now, what, from your perspective, would you say democracy offers Africans today, and why should its population sort of advocate or fight for it?
I mean, the most important thing about democracy is that it has the capacity to make society equal by distributing power. That's the ideal thing. You know, there is no country where societies are equal this time, but you can approximate to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think distributing power, distributing wealth of the nation can happen only if there is democratic discourse and also democratization and practice. So it is often described as the rule of the majority, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rule by the people.
Yeah.
Even though that's an ideal way, but you can approximate to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps to resolve different views and conflicts peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, without going to the devastating wars and, you know, we are witnessing now in most of our countries in Africa.
Yeah.
My own country, you can see there is a devastating war. It's because of lack of democratic engagement. Mm-hmm. And you can resolve your differences by peaceful means. You shouldn't raise arms to resolve your conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It is lack of democratic attitude as well as democratic practice within the society, mainly the elite. So I think it's very essential for Africa. It helps people to participate with ownership in their countries to accelerate development and equitable prosperity, you know?
Yeah.
No country has moved into prosperity without properly democratizing. People mention about China, that China has moved into prosperity. Yes, it did, but it has its element of democratization within it. But, I mean, democracy shouldn't be seen as simply a Western model of democracy alone. There are elements of democratization also in China, but whether the Chinese model is working or not, yet to be seen for the future. But people always want to see freedom and free will and free thinking and innovation. And so I think we will see how it goes. But I can assure you there is element of people's participation in the process. But I don't normally fully subscribe that the Western model is the only model of democratization. Africa should seek into how to bring about this people's rule, people's participation with context. You know, you are from Ghana.
Yeah.
The Ghanaian traditional system where there are elements of democratization. It doesn't mean that the Ghanaian traditional system is flawed. I think we should see and somehow properly, you know, screen and scrutinize where you find elements of people's rule within the Ghanaian traditional system, and you can blend with modern democratic processes without neglecting your own traditional ways of doing things.
Yeah.
So I think Africa needs to go beyond the model we have now. Because in most cases, this Western model in Africa, because of our own cultural, religious, traditional ways to handle things, it doesn't fully fit into the African system. And we have to look into how to make it fitting. I agree with the definition, but I do not fully subscribe that the Western model is the only model of doing it.
We have to find our way to make it work.
Exactly.
Your Excellency, I wonder, what would your message be to quite a number of young people who find themselves in countries where it feels like sort of the democratic model exactly isn't helping them? Obviously, we don't want people to take up arms, but I think sometimes people feel like they don't have an option because the system is managed and held by people who value one thing, which is different from what the population want. What thoughts do you have on how to go about ensuring that people's voices are heard, that they can actually remove the people they don't exactly want and vote into power the people that we want? I'm curious to know if you have any thoughts considering the things we are seeing on certain parts of the continent.
I think, first of all, whatever the case may be, armed struggle has never been a solution. It perpetuates again another armed struggle. It has never been a solution. The best way is you have to engage your people. It might take time, but ultimately people will win. So you have to sensitize your people. You have to make your people be aware. You shouldn't be rushing to go to power, to get into power. I think that's the main problem we have. We need a quick fix for something which needs a century and a generational engagement. And I think we should be persistent in engaging our people, and that people has a wisdom, and ultimately they will bring this change. So we shouldn't be quick enough to go and grab power and repeat the same thing and go into vicious circle.
Yeah.
The cycle is vicious in Africa, as you see. I always say, you know, ask opposition party members who always blame the ruling party. And when they win the election and come to power, immediately they repeat the same thing, the same mistakes the ruling party has been doing.
Yeah.
So it becomes a vicious process. So my view is that we need to be patient, and we need to be working with our young people. We need to have activism, civic activism, and awareness. And in so doing, we can have changes. And some countries in Africa has made that change. I pray that they do not derail and again lose the sight to go for self-enrichment and self-centric and egocentric kind of a leadership. But otherwise, I think we need patience. A good example is, for example, South Korea. You remember South Korea has moved into economic development in autocratic, leadership.
Yeah.
But when people start recognizing that they need freedom, they rose up in peaceful manner, and they were able to engage for years so that democracy started to flourish. So it's possible. History tells us that it's possible to do that, But by all means, armed struggle has to be rejected because that has never brought changes. Let me give you one example. We did have liberation movements all along Africa, especially in the Southern Africa.
Yeah.
You can imagine all those liberation movements, those parties remained in power for since independence, most of them. And ultimately, it has brought the demise of those parties and leadership. And so I think armed struggle can do something better in some ways, but it is not a sustainable way of, you know, transitioning into democracy.
Right.
So I think we need to have a democratic discourse, an engagement, and citizen participation, and active citizenry, so that can bring slowly a change we aspire for. So I think this is what I always suggest, that it cannot be a solution.
Yeah. Very well heard, sir. And so changing the line of conversation as we wrap up a bit, I know that you are an avid advocate of conservation. And you even once said, right, that we need to sort of brand Africa as the conservation continent. I wanted to get a bit more insight into when you sort of developed this interest in this space and why that has become such a pressing area of interest for you.
Actually, it starts from my childhood. I have been grown up in rural Ethiopia.
Mm.
Where I was very friendly to the foresters and wildlife. And we did have very much, especially in the southern part of Ethiopia where I was brought up, we did have intact ecosystem. But through the course of time, we lost most of them. And you know, Ethiopia is, you know, nowadays, not only the northern part, even the southern part, which we always boast of some conservation work taking place, we have become a poster child case for food insecurity and sometimes famine. So it is because we lost all the intact ecosystem we did have. You know, in majority. So we have to bring back this. And Africa has that potential. Even in Ethiopia, the western part of Ethiopia is still intact. If we do not engage now, then the destruction will continue. So conservation is the basis for everything, for basis of life. You know, the climate change catastrophe we are seeing now, the drought, flooding, wildfire, which Africa has never witnessed wildfire. But you remember the day, a year before last year, we witnessed wildfire in Africa, which has never been there. So what else can you say that conservation, it should be a conservation continent? Otherwise, we lose everything. And we can also learn lessons from the past mistakes. As a latecomers, we should repeat those mistakes the Western countries, Asian countries, including China, has lost their ecosystem and the natural heritage. So I think that's the reason why I still see that we can save our continent if we focus on conservation and sustainable ecosystem. That is, you know, in some areas we have to go for restoration, both soil and water conservation work, and afforestation, and we have to avoid and stop deforestation, and we have to try to have a managed forest, participatory forest management with the community, and we have to have community conservation areas where people are at the center of and get the livelihood properly from these conservation areas. And I think all this is important to combat climate change and also have a mitigation measures, as it is science is telling us. So it's a scientific way of doing it. And at least we have to have in the coming maybe 8-7 years left for 2030, 30% of our continental landmass has to be conserved.
Yeah, I believe, is it Namibia and maybe Botswana started doing that?
Yeah, I think that most of the Southern Africa countries, including Tanzania, Botswana, Namibia, are very well, and Angola, are well in that range, including Zambia as well.
Well, finally, Your Excellency, what comes to mind when you think of Africa in 2050?
I think in order to visualize that, I want to have some comparative analysis. Look, the South Koreans and the Taiwanese and the Singaporeans and the other ASEAN countries, even China, within a generation, 2050 is, you know, from now to one generation. In a generation time, these countries, you know, we have seen that they have moved fast and accelerated economic growth, and they have brought their country from rags to riches. You know, they are now the wealthy countries of the world in a generation time. So why not Africa? I see, therefore, in 2050, I have a vision to see Africa as a developed continent, a wealthy continent with equitably shared wealth and prosperity and freely thinking and innovative people in the continent. And of course, you know, this is the last frontier for economic development and a leading continent, a new continent to be seen as a wealthy continent that even others start relying on. So that's my vision.
That's remarkable. And I think even for some of us, we need to open our minds to envisioning some of these things, to look at the experiences of others, how long they took to achieve things, when they achieve things, and what that means for how we can do things, knowing what we know now about the state of affairs. Your Excellency, I cannot thank you enough for giving me this time. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I'm so happy to be able to share with people. I'm truly honored to be on the other side of it. So thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
Very soon. Thanks, Maria, for the interview. And I'm also very happy to be part of this.
That brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did putting it together. I love learning new things. Hey, if you enjoyed this chat, you definitely enjoy others that came before it. Check out previous episodes on whichever platform you're tuned into now, or visit our website, www.thebrenthurstfoundation.org, for other episodes. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if I could make one last ask of you, please do share this with others. Again, you're listening to Marie Noel on the Brenthurst Foundation podcast, and it's been a pleasure sharing this time with you.